Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
This is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, in for Angela Davis. So, what's getting you through the pandemic? You know, coping is personal and it changes. I mean, some people learned to bake bread. Others planted their first garden, read their way through Agatha Christie, renovated their homes. I feel like I explored every street and alley in my neighborhood. Well, some of us also discovered local libations. Now, according to the Minnesota State Auditor, liquor store profits increased by 29% in 2020. So, what are we drinking? We make beer, wine, and spirits here, and there's something for everyone. Now, not many people know this, but the first commercially developed wine grape happened right here in Minnesota. I definitely didn't know this, and I need to learn more about that, and we'll find out about that and other factoids today. And I want to hear from you. The phone lines are open. Is there a drink that got you through the pandemic? What are you serving with your holiday meal? Is there a special holiday alcohol you wait for every year? Do you pair your drinks with the menu, the music, or the guests? Is there a mocktail that you would recommend? We want to hear from you. Call us, 651-227-6000, or that's 800-242-2828. And joining me today are James Norton. He's the founding editor of HeavyTable.com, and Lauren Green, a freelance writer who specializes in art and culture. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, James, tell me, what's your favorite bit of history when it comes to producing alcohol in Minnesota?
Well, you know, it's the whole story is kind of fascinating. I think Minnesota has a little bit of a unique place in the national scene in terms of the Volstead Act. If you want to go back to 1919, where it was a Minnesota congressman who basically introduced the prohibition of intoxicating beverages. And I think ever since that sort of momentous moment, we've had a very fraught relationship with alcohol. I think there's been a lot of different efforts to sort of control it and to restrict it. And I think some of those fights are still kind of going on today. And we can talk more about that as we go forward. But, you know, the flip side of that is I think there's been a lot of, particularly in the last 10 or 15 years, a ton of creativity and innovation here as well. And I think the way the University of Minnesota has worked, as you mentioned earlier, to develop cold, hardy wine grapes has been kind of fascinating. The local cider industry is doing some things with a ton of integrity. And, you know, there's just been such an explosion of Minnesota-made craft beer and craft spirits that, you know, if you go to the liquor store today and you look around for an exciting locally made choice, you're just going to be daunted by all the options.
And Lauren, you know, James mentioned craft beers. I mean, are there holiday beers that you're looking forward to? Lauren? Okay, well, we'll go back to you, James.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So how would you describe the beer scene in Minnesota?
Well, you know, I think it's difficult to summarize the scene as a whole. I think it's a little more accurate to say that there are a variety of scenes, plural, and it kind of depends on what style of beer, what style of drinking you're hoping to do. Personally speaking, I really like a lot of German classic beers. So there's breweries like Waldmann and Arbeiter and Utapils that are doing stuff that's very true to style and, you know, very much harkens back to kind of a traditional continental model of brewing beer. But if you want to get crazy, if you want to get experimental, if you want to get, you know, big.
Crazy and experimental is good. That's good.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many other options out there. There's Modest and Dangerous Man and, Surly. It's a really fun scene to explore. And this is true also when you talk about you know, distilling and you talk about cidery, it's changing so rapidly. I would say every month or two, something new pops onto the radar screen and says, oh, hey, there's a lot of innovation taking place in Minnesota, in the Minnesota spirits world.
So, Lauren, I gather you're with us now. Is that right?
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh.
Technical difficulties.
Yeah, not at all. You know, it's technology. It happens. But I'm really glad you could join us. And what I wanted to ask you was, you know, are there holiday beers that you're looking forward to, you know, something that may be coming out around the Thanksgiving or Christmas time?
No, it's a time of year that I always look forward to. I kind of like the bigger, richer beers. I love hops, but you get a lot more malt and just different flavor experiences in the fall. This Bridge Commander Barley Wine is coming up soon. That's kind of a staple that I associate with Thanksgiving. On a lighter side, we've been seeing more kind of German alt beers, which I think play very well with fall.
Hmm. Okay. And, you know, this may sound like a strange question, Lauren, but, you know, beer to me is kind of like beer in summer, right? You know, it's a cold drink. It's the summertime. And yet we have this incredibly vibrant beer community here, craft scene.
Like you said, people often associate it with kind of Pilsner and those like crispy things you can drink on the beach or in the boat. But there's a diverse flavor profile, and a lot of these, like, you get your big stouts, they're well-suited to sitting by the fireplace. They're often, a lot of these kind of higher alcohol beers as well play better at a little bit warmer temperature. So,
Okay. So, you know, what I want to do is, let's sort of jump right into spirits, and I want to bring in Rick Snyder. He runs Asante Spirits in Asante, Minnesota, and he joins us from Asante. Hi, Rick.
Hey there, how's it going? It's good. Just so all the people of Isanti County know it. It's Isanti.
I apologize. Every once in a while, it comes out that I didn't grow up here. I managed to stumble through a name. Isanti. I do apologize to everybody. Just call it the East Coaster in me.
My father-in-law from Nebraska says Isanti like it's French.
Well, at least I didn't go that far. How did you get into distilling?
Well, I mean, so, my background is I was a punk rock musician in the 80s, you know, played 7th Street Entry and stuff when I was like 17. And I started to go to school to do music. I went to the Berklee College of Music in Boston, and I really wasn't happy out there. And I just kind of kept moving around. I ended up at the University of Wisconsin, and I found a glassblowing class. And started doing that and got into it and became an art professor, which I still am. I teach glassblowing at the Anoka Ramsey Community College in Coon Rapids and taught in a bunch of different places. Ended up in Alabama, which is just a terrible place for anyone from Minnesota to end up. Like, they don't think we're funny at all. And we were down there about 2 years, my wife and I, who also is an art professor. We were down there for 2 years and just never felt like we fit in. And I started looking for something else to do because there are only about 40 jobs in the country for what I do. It's a very competitive field. And if you're leaving it without a job to go to, you got to be doing something else.
So I just have to interrupt here. So musician, you know, punk rock musician, glass blower, naturally you would just think, oh, I'm going to become a distiller.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you know, and I had actually had a long curiosity. I mean, I grew up drinking whiskey with my dad and my grandpa, mostly Canadian stuff. You know, I stole Canadian Club out of the liquor cabinet as a teenager. And so I'd always had an interest.
That's another program.
That is another program. The stuff we took from our parents. When I was in college in Madison in the 90s, a bunch of my friends started getting into home brewing, and I went with them to the store once. I was like, hey, how do I make whiskey? And they kind of laughed at me and said, you know, that's illegal. You can't do that at home. And, you know, I'm probably one of the few distillers who didn't start out doing it illegally in my garage. So I did a lot of home brewing, got into that. But it was always in the back of my mind that I wanted to know how to make whiskey, but not enough to go to a library or, you know, your chemistry teacher is not going to teach you that kind of stuff. And so it just was a curious thing. And then we're in Alabama. We're trying to figure out something else to do. And my wife and my kids, who are like 3 and 5 then, were watching something on TV I didn't want to watch. So I got on the internet and I was drinking a glass of Maker's Mark bourbon and I punched how to make whiskey into Google. And, you know, this is 2010, about then.
Okay.
There were maybe 100 to 150 small distilleries. Like, it was much harder to get into, much steeper curve of entry. And so there weren't very many by then. And it looked really exciting. And I was, again, this is just my curiosity. Like, I'm following different distilleries online and, you know, looking at their stills going, how much does that cost? How much will that whiskey, how much whiskey will that make? And like, can I do this in my garage? And it turns out, yes, you can, because I do it in a big pole shed. And I did it. I just looked into it for about 2 months and I was reading some forums and somebody recommended a book, by a guy named Bill Owens, who's now a really good friend of mine. And I read his book on how to get started in it. And by the time I hit the end of that book, I was like, yeah, I want to do this. I can do this. So I sat my wife down at the table one night after dinner and I just said, hey, how would you feel if I wanted to quit my teaching job and start making whiskey for a living? And I have the best wife in the world, because Nikki just looked at me and said, wow, that actually sounds pretty awesome. Like, if we're not going to do this, that would be really fun. And, you know, she's primarily a 2D person, so she gets into designing labels, and like, we print and make our own t-shirts in our basement. Like, we do all the creative
stuff. So when did you open for business?
So we opened for business, like, we bought our property in 2013, formed the company in 2013, and then we started producing 2014, 2015, got out in the retail space in 2015.
Okay. So, and just, what are your plans for the future?
You know, like I sort of kept away from doing a cocktail room, because back then I thought I could make it in distribution, but you learn really quickly that distributors, it's hard to work with a one person company. You know, I'm so small. I'm probably the smallest, if not one of the smallest in the state. So last year we built a cocktail room when the entire world was shut down. And it actually has a glass blowing studio in it, which will open in December, the glass blowing part of it. So we're going to be making the glassware you drink out of. You'll be able to watch people. So really the near future is right there. Making this more of a tourist destination, and we'll be the only distillery in the country with a glass blowing studio in it. And, and then like the next thing is I want to build a timber framed round barn, that'll be a wedding and event space where the weddings and events will take place where there's a total ring of whiskey barrels around you. So that's kind of my next building project. How soon that'll happen, I don't know.
Well, I have to say, pun intended, but I love the entrepreneurial spirit. And
thank you.
I'm really glad that you were joining us. And happy holidays to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
So let's make a shift right to the phone lines right now and open up the conversation, start bringing in some of our listeners. And to start off, we'll go to Greg in Minneapolis. So, Greg, what's your observation?
Hi, I'm calling from Norseman Distillery, actually here in Minneapolis, too. I just want to call in and kind of hit on what Rick was saying. I've met Rick a few times. I love what he's doing up there in Izanti. And just kind of hit on how, like, distilleries in the state have had to evolve with the COVID situation. And I know everyone has their own ways of doing things. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've kind of done a really great thing here with what we're doing at Norseman.
And what are you doing?
With COVID, things were hard. Things were slowing down, and our bar had closed, just like all the restaurants and bars in the area. So we came out with these holiday staycation cocktail kits. They're NA cocktail kits. They're standard 12-ounce cans. But instead of, you know, producing the cocktails at the bar by a bartender, we're doing that all in-house, all the production facility here. And we're doing it with premier ingredients. So we're using fresh juices, fresh botanicals, things like that. And then each one of those is going to come with a bottle of liquor. And that's really, it's kind of special for the consumer because they were able to come in, get that contactless pickup, kind of avoiding all the COVID issues, having great precautions with our pickup. And they're still getting that experience at home of Norseman, which is great.
So I'm curious. So is this a community that you mentioned that you know, Rick? I mean, is this a community where you're still all sort of sharing ideas and supporting each other? I mean, is it that kind of a community, even though you're also competitors?
We are competitors, yeah. But it is very tight-knit. There's the Distillers Guild of Minnesota, and that was started with, like, Moon Liquors down in Richfield. Or not Richfield, down south. I can't remember the city name. But yeah, all the distilleries are involved in that, trying to get legislation passed. And us at Norseman, we're always working with local wineries. We're working with local breweries, anything, you know, to make our products better, to make our experience better, and to help out the community, because we're all in this together. Just like with COVID, we got to get through it.
Okay. So I wanted to bring Rick and Lauren into the conversation. So I'm just curious, what are your reaction to what you heard from Rick James?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think we're you know, reaction specifically
to his story about creating, you know, this passion.
Yeah, I
about
mean, I think what came out of that story. Sorry to stutter there.
No.
That we're at a point where smaller sort of distillers and producers can jump into the game, and, you know, thanks to what happened in 2014, the bill signed by Mark Dayton that allowed cocktail rooms to become established, and for producers in Minnesota to actually sell 375 milliliter bottles out of their physical locations, we've got this opportunity, I think, for people to jump into the spirits game and really turn their operations not just into production sites, but also to tourist hubs, to destinations where you can gather and have a wedding, where you can gather and, I don't know, watch someone blow glass, which is a new one for me, but absolutely fantastic.
That does sound like fun, doesn't it?
It changes the whole fabric of the way the industry sort of produces and interacts with the public. And I think as, you know, hopefully COVID sort of recedes and vaccine levels rise and that aspect of things normalizes, you know, I think that ability for people to interact with spirits in a kind of rich and multi-textured way is going to be absolutely fantastic for travel, for tourism, and for the industry specifically.
And Lauren, I mean, an open-ended question about your reaction to what Rick was talking about, but it does, while he was talking, it just seems to me that, you know, a lot of the sort of craft beer scene has also been built around this notion of, you know, building community, building neighborhood.
Yeah, I think that's been a fascinating thing that's popped up. I think it partly happened in movement with, or in parallel to a larger cultural movement toward more kind of Main Street businesses instead of big boxes. Like, you see a lot of places that are reviving, especially in smaller towns, downtown historic sites. This summer I stopped at Starry Eyed Brewing and Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. It's a gorgeous building. I just happened to be in the area. It's a former theater. It's kind of amazing what they've done. And, like, similarly, you see places, they're directly tied to their community. They're literally named after the city, the street, or the neighborhood. It's a connection not just to their location, but it really feels like a gathering place for people.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's go to Eric in Little Falls. Eric, what is your what would you like to say?
Good morning. Just curious if you could touch on the growth in the non-alcoholic beer and spirits movement. For health reasons, I've had to cut back on alcohol intake, and I've switched over to non-alcoholic IPAs. I've got little bit.
Sure. And what do you what do you like the, among the non-alcoholic drinks?
There's a brand called Well Being that makes a really good IPA. Athletic Brewing Company has excellent products. I'm not finding a lot locally produced. I'd love it if Surly would jump into the game. That'd be great if they could kick out a NAIPA.
Yeah, I've heard of the Athletic Brewing, and a friend of mine has recommended that, so I would like to try that. Lauren, the non-alcoholic beer.
It is definitely a growing field. There are a few more local companies. Hairless Dog makes a canned product. I don't believe they have any public space. They don't do the variety that you get with a taproom, of course, because it's canned, so I think it's like four main lineups, and... Oh, I'm drawing a blank on the name right now, but there's another local lab company that's working with a lot of the local breweries on a system that removes alcohol after brewing, I believe. So it, you will see a lot of like breweries or taprooms that have one NA option now.
Okay.
It's still not the norm. It's probably like 25, 10%. I'm making up numbers here, but... Mm-hmm. It's definitely a growing field because I think a lot of people are hitting that those health issues, and you know, let's face it, alcohol isn't good for you.
Yeah. So, James, any insight into the non-alcoholic spirit side of the business?
Well, it's not nearly as lucrative, obviously, as selling alcoholic spirits, and you know, I think the explosive growth out there has been in seltzers and ready-to-drink cocktails. But, you know, one thing that we write about a lot at Heavy Table and on our Beer, Wine, and Spirits newsletter, the Tulip and Schooner, is just the beauty of infusing your own syrups, which is something that anybody can do with, you know, it's extremely easy stovetop operation. This last summer, my wife and I harvested about 18 cups of chokeberries from our backyard. They're tannic, they're earthy, and if you cook them down into a syrup, it can be a base for a fantastic non-alcoholic cocktail. And you know, I think that's a great option for people who want to do something that has some depth and some sophistication and some tie to the local land and doesn't have any alcohol going on. You know, if you build your own sort of infused syrup as a base, you know, I think kind of the sky's the limit. I think we will see some more options rolling out into the marketplace, but you know, the profit margins are not quite there in the same way as they are for alcoholic spirits.
Okay, so before we take a break from the news, two things. First of all, I just want to reach out if you want to tell us your story about what you're serving with your holiday meal. You know, is there a special holiday alcohol that you wait for every year? Do you pair your menu with music? Yes. And is there a mocktail that you particularly like? And we want to hear from you, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. And the other thing is, Rick talked about the connection between music and spirits. And James, you sent us a few songs that are givens for you when it comes to pairing music with drink. And one is Pressure Drop from Toots and the Maytals. So let's take a listen. All right, I could keep listening to that, but I want to come back to you, James. And what is so great about mixing a drink to Pressure Drop?
Well, you know, I think we all have that certain song or that certain album that we put on, and it just gives you that deep-seated emotional cue that everything is going to be all right. And, you know, I'm a big fan of first wave ska from Jamaica and the vicinity. And, you know, Pressure Drop, it's right there in the name to some extent. It's just one of those things that start to relax, and you put a cocktail together with that going on in the background, get conversation rolling. You know, I think it's music is such a big component of the way we gather, and everyone's got different, you know, different priorities. But, you know, for me, I love something that's kind of laid back. It's got some real integrity to it, some real history to it, and you know that. Then it's time to kind of unwind and enjoy the gathering.
Well, it is a great song. Our guests are James Norton and Lauren Green, And I want to go right to the phone lines, and let's go to Michelle. And Michelle is in St. Paul. Michelle, what is your observation? Hello? All right. Well, let's go to Sarah. Let's go to Mary in Excelsior. Mary?
Yes.
Hi. What is? What would you like to say?
Well, I would like to say and put out on the air that I grew up in the Bay Area of California. And during the 1940s, when I specifically grew up there, we had a china closet in our dining room, and on the bottom shelf was a bottle of Rock and Rye. And at every holiday, Thanksgiving, Christmas, or what it would be, my dad would let us take a sip of this Rock and Rye. Now, I have tried to find it in different stores to no avail. And I'm wondering if anybody on the air that is listening here has heard of Rock and Rye. And I suspect that the rocks in the bottom of the bottle may have been sugar cubes. So I'm just putting that out there to see okay. if this was a homemade thing, but it had a label on it, and I really don't know or remember what the label was. But it was Rock and Rye, very attractive, in the bottom of our china closet. So for whatever you can find out, I would be very grateful.
Well, thanks. Let's see if you know, it's an off chance, maybe a Hail Mary pass, but see, James, Rock and Rye?
You know, this is a new one for me, but a brief visit to the internet suggests it's a blend of citrus and rye whiskey sweetened with crystallized sugar, sometimes known as rock candy. And it looks like there's a number of different brands out there that have a spirit along those lines. Jackeen's, Mr. Boston, Hochstatter's, all called Rock and Rye, and it's all kind of that concept. But that's the first time I've heard of it. It definitely sounds celebratory.
There you go. Well, Mary, at least there are a couple of options for you to explore. And, you know, right now what I want to do is let's go to Heather Manley. And Heather runs Crooked Water Spirits. And Heather's one of a handful of women making craft spirits in Minnesota. And she joins us on the phone from Minneapolis. Welcome to the program.
How's it going?
It's going well. And I'm so glad you could join us. And so tell us, what got you into distilling?
Actually, I had a really beautiful product, the Gamel Eau de l'Aquavit, and made at 45th Parallel. And it was an individual that was contract distilling there, and it was 50 pounds of dill per batch. And I feel like his product is a beautiful, beautiful example of the difference of micro versus macro. And I went home and thought, what could I bring to market that nobody else is doing? And my background, so my passions are family, food, and booze in that order. So I have a tech company that is family, and I have a spice company at Kowalski's that is food. And it was just natural to start a business around the booze side, which, you know, I think when you're working towards or working within your passions, you're not working at all. And they're all at different levels of success, but they're all completely satisfying and fun.
So where'd the name come from? Crooked Water.
So I live in Minnetrista, just 10 minutes of Excelsior West, and Minnie is water. Trista is crooked.
There you go. That's okay. And have there been difficulties, or what has been the hardest part about being a woman in the craft business?
Oh, well, you know, I don't think it's hard at all. I think we have an advantage. It's a differentiating value. I'm sure there's maybe boys clubs that I'm not aware of that might exist, and that exists in every industry. So you just kind of have to let that go. And I always say I like to do consensual business. So like water, I'm going to flow to where people want to embrace me, engage me. And for those that don't, let it go. I think that women have fantastic palates, very sensitive palates. So I think we have some advantages in not only the creation of products, but the creativity. It's a pretty complacent industry. It's been really beautiful to see men and women craft distillers pop up and really disrupt the industry. And there's a lot more to come. Being a woman, we're in 8 states, going around and talking to the distributors. It's usually men that they see come up there, and it's usually men that are selling to a PowerPoint and their data. Where I'm coming in, and I make all of my recipes, I create them, I evangelize them. So I'm talking to these groups from why I started the business to why I made this particular product and how, and then sharing our differentiating values in the marketplace. And to get that full life cycle in a maker, I don't think is very common. It's been a way that we've been able to resonate with the distributors, and honestly, we absolutely need them to be successful in a marketplace, because without distribution, it's really difficult. I don't have a cocktail room. I've taken a much different route. I don't want to run a bar. And many times having a cocktail room can be a great income creator. But when I'm already running a tech company, it becomes a distraction. So then what I really do is lean into the distributor to help us gain traction versus that tasting room. So that partnership is really critical for me.
So when you're talking to the distributor, give us the elevator speech, but it's going up to a real high rise. So we're going way up. But sort of the elevator speech, why you need this product?
Well, our pillars are innovation, quality, and the experience. So innovation is, I don't try to make anything that's out there but still approachable. Quality is starting high level and staying high level. And experience means high proofing. So because I'm the sole owner, I have zero investors. And I actually put 100% of the profits back in this company. I've not taken a dollar out of it while still raising over 150 grand for charities. I can be really particular on what I bring to market and how. And I think that's a really unique experience or a really unique business model right now. I don't have to rush anything to market. I'm very traditional in my approach to the bourbons and full casks and single barrel harvesting, not saving. And I work hard on bringing in those differentiating values. So I'm Whiskey Psalm certified. We were the first distillery spirits company to get certified as woman-owned in America. So that gave me conversations with Delta, Starbucks, Walmart. We've gotten over 60 awards from California to New York for creating really beautiful, high-level products. And our process is, our King's Point compared to Angel's Envy King's Point is a perfect example of craft versus macro. So really having those pillars and adhering to them and having the freedom to adhere to them, because I don't take any money out of the company and I don't owe anyone any money.
And I'm curious, where do you get your barrels?
So our barrels, they kind of come from all over, but the ones where we do where I feel a lot of the beauty come from are out of Portugal, or they're out of Spain, or I work with a local cooperage here for Old Hell Roaring on the second cask that we create, that nobody in the world has the second cask, and we multi-hour toast it, we char it, we smoke it. We really take the barrel to 11 to create that differentiating profile, because a lot of the bourbons, when you put them on, you can tell when something's different. And so at the end of the day, when you try my product, I want to make sure that I get an eyebrow raise out of it, and it's not just the beautiful profile that you expect out of a solid bourbon, but that you're tasting that gorgeous port cask from a 100-year-old vineyard in Douro Valley, or the sherry notes on the nose from I get my casks from the same location as Macallan. But these are, $650 casks that we only use once. So it's not a super sustainable or macro approach. It's really, that high quality approach and no compromise.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I'm glad that you could join us, and happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays to you too. Thanks for the support. I appreciate it.
Heather Manley runs Crooked Water Spirits. And now let's go back to the calls and go back to George. George is in St. Paul. George.
All right. Good morning.
What?
Taking my call.
Yeah. No. What would you like to say?
So I kind of have a question. I don't know if this has been asked. I just jumped on the line for this great conversation. I know Tattersall Distillery in Minneapolis is moving a new location, which they could have opened in Minnesota, to Wisconsin. And I heard that it's based around the amount of alcohol that a micro distillery or distiller in Minnesota can produce, which I feel hampers the ability for some of these smaller producers to get distribution into larger quantities and liquor stores around the area. So I just want to know if that topic has been brought up or if there's anything in the legislature working to try and keep our distillers here. I know we're getting towards the end of the show, so I'll take my call off the line. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for calling. And Lauren James, I know you're not legislative experts, but James, would you know anything about this?
Yeah, if you get too large, I think production of 40,000 proof gallons at a location, you can't operate a cocktail room and sell product directly to guests. And so that is having the effect of as a spirits company kind of rises through the ranks and you know, levels up. Tattersall, I think, is in 30 different markets at this point from coast to coast. Minnesota is not really a realistic place to expand. And so they're creating a really terrific looking destination distillery and cocktail room in River Falls, Wisconsin. So it's just over the border. It should be accessible to the Twin Cities Metro, but it's kind of a loss for the state of Minnesota in terms of revenue and in terms of tourism draw. And we've seen that with beer too. Liftbridge Brewery just opened a destination a brewery and kind of event center, I think in New Richmond, Wisconsin as well. And you know, I was talking at the very top of the program about how the sort of the legislative environment for spirits in Minnesota is challenging for a lot of companies. There's a lot of quirky kind of ceilings and restrictions that are meant to preserve the three-tier distribution system. And that's going to have the effect of as these homegrown, you know, craft companies grow up and get bigger, they're going to potentially have to leave the state, at least in part, if not entirely, in order to kind of attain national aspirations.
And Lauren, is this something when you're talking to the owners of, you know, different breweries, different craft beer makers, has the legislative environment come up in the conversation?
All the time. It's, as James mentioned, it's a curious system where it's understandable how the three-tier system came to be, but it involves a lot of give and take between the different sides of the liquor industry. And as these, it generally doesn't affect a lot of the startups quite as much, but they're almost penalized for success after a certain point. Because Tattersall, for example, and Castle Danger just hit the growler limit last year, which is a similar issue. Once you hit a certain size, you can't sell take-home growlers at your tap room. And there's a lot of question about why those numbers are there, what that number means, and simply put, businesses feel like they're being punished for running a successful growing company.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to Jim in Minneapolis. Jim.
Hey there. Hey. Yeah, this is Jim Dale. I'm the director of wholesale in Stillwater. So we are second oldest winery in the state, and the oldest winery that focuses on the locally developed hybrid grapes from the U of M. And I got a couple of good ideas for the holiday drinks.
Sure.
So we got one of our best-selling wines, the raspberry infusion, which everybody loves, even if you're a wine snob, pardon the term. But
you're allowed to use the term. It's okay. It's all right.
Awesome. So the thanks, Chris. One of my favorite drinks is just to make a spritzer. Just take the raspberry infusion, little club soda, squeeze a lime. If you want to pump it up a little bit, you can add a little bit of gin or vodka. Also, it works really great with like a dessert. So I put the whole bottle, it's a 375 bottle, into a blender, add chocolate ice cream, turn it on, you're done. You got 12 easy cocktails for when you're having a party. Put a little whipped cream, sprig of mint on top, boom, done. And another one of the wines that's really great for the holiday times is the La Crescent. A lot of people think it's like summertime only wine, but it mimics Torontes from Argentina, or Chenin Blanc, Vignier type of aromatic white. And so it works with any kind of food. What's good about that, you're going to a party, you don't know what they're serving exactly. The La Crescent from St. Croix Vineyards will work with anything.
All right.
So those are my kind of go-tos right there.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in with your suggestions. I like that. And, you know, James, I want to get back to this idea. I guess I really like this idea about pairing with music and alcohol. I mean, just now, correct me if I got this wrong, you know, but I'm looking at my notes here. And that there's a song that you really like, and it's by Antonio Carlos Jobim and Ellis Regina. And this is a song that you really do like when it comes to pairing. Is this, or you're mixing a cocktail? Is this correct?
Yeah, it's a song called Aguas de Marzo, the Waters of March. And it's actually the song my wife and I danced to at our wedding. And it's another one of those, just, it's a mood setter, you know, you can feel your blood pressure dropping as it plays. And, it's something that I think every party I've thrown for the last 15 years it's popped up at some point over the course of the evening. And it's always nice to hear.
Well, let's give it a listen.
É pau, é pedra, é o fim do caminho, é o resto de toco, é um pouco sozinho, é um caco de vidro, é a vida, é o sol, é a noite, é a morte, é o laço, é o anzol, é peroba do campo,
é o nó da madeira.
Well, this is radio, not TV, so you can't see the producers sort of shimming in the background, but they really did like that song. So did I. But let's go back to the phone lines now, energized by that song, and let's go to Sarah in St. Paul. Sarah, what would you like to talk about? Sarah?
Yes. Hi, this is Sarah in St. Paul. I wanted to share our favorite family mocktail, and I add gin to it. You can add vodka to it, but we do a little bit of cranberry or a little bit of pomegranate juice, mm-hmm. and muddled pomegranate seeds with tonic, or you can use any carbonated water, depending on your sweetness flavoring desires. And it is a great family favorite. It involves the kids. They get to make their own if they want. It's fantastic.
And how did you come up with this recipe? Just sort of experimentation?
Yep, absolutely. And then we serve it with a little wedge of lime. So you get that lime and pomegranate. And it's a great holiday favorite for everybody.
Ah, well, thank you for calling in with your suggestion. Yeah.
Pomegranate is one of our absolute favorite foods in the house, and that's when they're in season, and so it adds that pop of color.
Yep.
Great.
Ah, well, thank you so much for calling in with that. And, well, that makes me think, James, do you have a recipe for a drink that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I mean, so we have kind of a house drink that fits our, two or three ingredient cocktail mandate. We call it a rhinoceros. It's a 2-to-1 rye whiskey and chinar. And chinar is it's an Italian bitters. It's actually kind of got an artichoke derivation thing going on. And it's incredibly, it's earthy. It's sippable. It's got a ton of bite, a ton of depth. It's incredibly easy to make. You're just 2-to-1 rye whiskey and chinar over a big rock. And it is just, it's one of those things you can hand it to a guest as they walk in, and they will sip it and enjoy it for, 45 minutes as you kind of run around the room frantically trying to get the the meal and the rest of the event pulled together, which is always one of my criteria for a celebration cocktail.
That's absolutely a good criteria. And Lauren, you know, it is Friday, and when work is over, I don't know when work would be over for you, but, you know, where will you be going? Where will you be exploring when it comes to drinking, you know, trying different beers?
It's a good question. It kind of depends on the mood a lot. Friday is always a little more celebratory, as you're saying. Sometimes a little more tired, too. So,
do you have, like, a favorite place that you tend to find yourself?
Because I live in Minneapolis, I tend to often stick a little closer to home. Ben Brewing is right up the street from me, and I hit there more than I probably would like to admit.
Okay.
In other stops, I enjoy heading over to St. Paul, kind of hitting in Midway. I think Dual Citizen is kind of overlooked a lot of the time, and I enjoy hitting them. Falling Knife offers some good hazy IPAs when you're looking for that style. That's just a few to name.
And do you have a favorite beer when it comes to Thanksgiving dinner?
Well, that depends on what you're going for, but I kind of like going with something that comes in a bigger bottle that you can share. It's more about pairing with a meal than, you know, drinking beer all day. So.
Yeah. Oh, it's that sort of community feeling. But if you had this big bottle that you wanted to share with people and just is, you know, and assuming, you know, people are having turkey, not everybody has turkey, but if they're having turkey, is there a pairing there that you like?
Yeah. You know, I feel like I mentioned this already at the start of the show, but my go-to is Lethbridge Commander. I think barley wines work well. And another one that just came out that's more of the rich side for dessert that would go really well with like a pumpkin or pecan pie would be Inbound has a Minnesota rice beer.
Mm.
It's kind of like a brown ale. It's very rich, but nutty and complex. Sweet, but not in that same caramelized sweet way.
Okay. Well, good. And James, as we're getting toward the end of the show, I'm just curious for Heavy Table is... Are you like the, you know, the beer industry, the wine industry, the liquor stores where the holiday season is the really busy season? Is that true for your business?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the last 2 months of the year is just, it's this time where everybody can kind of take stock and see old friends and family. And that just, it means great food, great spirits. And, you know, I think it's going to be a crazy and wonderful couple of months, and hopefully, you know, we'll see people settle back into safe and healthy gathering routines as the vaccine rate goes up and we can kind of get back in the swing of things.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Our time, as you can hear the music, our time has come to an end. And I want to thank both our guests, James Norton from HeavyTable.com and Lauren Green is a freelance arts and culture writer. And thank you so much for the people who called in with their ideas.
Programming is supported by the Original Mattress Factory, offering factory direct, locally made mattresses, hand building mattresses and box springs in Maplewood since 1994, and selling them directly to customers in their own stores. Learn more at originalmattress.com.